Welcome back to State of Belief Radio. I'm Welton Gaddy. With impressive regularity, the Public Religion Research Institute manages to gather compelling and eye-opening data on the society in which we live. Going beyond the simplistic polls so often cited on the evening news, PRRI surveys provide insights that are sometimes hopeful, sometimes discouraging, but always valuable. Here on this program, we try not to miss an opportunity to keep up on this work, and we don't have to, thanks to Institute CEO and founder Dr. Robert P. Jones' willingness to brief us on it. Two recent studies, one looking at how different generations of Americans have developed radically different perspectives on LGBT rights, and the other on how our neighbors see the growing diversity in our nation and culture, especially at the 10th anniversary of 9/11, both offer fascinating revelations. And here to take on the almost impossible task of providing an overview of both studies in a limited amount of time is Robert Jones. Robbie, thanks so much for joining us again on State of Belief Radio.
Oh, thanks, Welton. I'm so happy to be here. Thanks for that generous introduction.
Well, let's start with the newest report, analyzing the way Americans view the growing diversity in their midst. You tied this into the 10th anniversary of 9/11, as would be understandable, and issues of Islam obviously come into play. You found some serious problems. Could you touch on some of the highlights?
Yeah. Well, we did try to take a read of the American public on where they were 10 years after 9/11, particularly on issues of diversity in the country. And, you know, what we found is that on the one hand, Americans are strongly, strongly committed to First Amendment principles, such as freedom of religion for everyone, even groups that are unpopular. We had 9 in 10 Americans say they affirm that principle. 95% of Americans say that all religious books should be treated with respect. We had this kind of Quran burning episode earlier in the country. We have near consensus that that's something that shouldn't be done in the country. Nearly two-thirds say that we should have a strict separation of church and state. But we also have some signs that Americans are struggling to apply these principles evenly and consistently with newer immigrants and particularly with Muslim Americans.
Yeah, I want to talk about that in a moment because I frankly was surprised at that number. It was hopeful at first. But then I got to thinking, well, maybe they don't mean by separation of church and state the same thing that the Interfaith Alliance does.
Right.
Talk a little bit more about that.
Well, our question's pretty straightforward, and it has the word strict in there, right? So we say, you agree or disagree, it's a straight up or down question, that we should have a strict separation of church and state. Now, we don't go into defining it, but it's a pretty strong version of the question. And we have, two-thirds of the country saying yes. But as I said, I think the real question, and as you know, is what happens to that affirmation of a principle when the rubber hits the road with particular things? And there we see, some wobbliness, I think, of applying it. But, in some ways, this is a story is an old story in America, right, that we have, in every generation, a kind of strong affirmation of principle that we then struggle to apply in specific instances, whether it's slavery, whether it's previous minority groups in the country, such as Jews and Catholics, which only a couple of generations ago there were quotas at Ivy League schools and prohibitions at country clubs, prohibiting Jews and Catholics from attending. Today, for example, Jews and Catholics are among the highest enjoy the highest favorability ratings. In fact, in our latest survey, Jews edged out Catholics by a point at 84% favorability in the country, and they're the highest group by a point enjoying favorability today. And a few generations ago, I think that would have been very surprising.
Well, I mean, you're not surprised. I'm interested in the church state one, but just recently, and I want to say this because I'm proud of it. Just recently, my friend and critic Richard Land from the Southern Baptist Convention called me a radical on church state relations because I believe in a strict interpretation of that. So two-thirds of these people said that's right too. So I'm not by myself. Okay, let's go on. The PRRI study suggests that younger Americans routinely interact with people of different backgrounds far more frequently than older Americans. Talk about that one.
Yeah. This is one of the most important aspects, I think, in American culture that I think we're only beginning to feel. But we see it very clearly in public opinion surveys. The millennial generation, that is Americans who are 18 to 29 years of age, is the most ethnically and religiously diverse generation this country has ever seen. They're much more likely than older Americans to have frequent contact with minority groups, both ethnic minorities and religious minorities. They're also far more likely than seniors, for example, to have friends who are gay or lesbian. And we're going to talk about those issues in a moment. But these social relationships, I think, and this kind of age cohort, they've come of age with a very diverse – they also have very diverse family relationships. And so all of this diversity is just part of the mix for this generation, which gives them a very different – they have a more open outlook toward minorities and also toward gay and lesbian Americans. And it's largely because of these social relationships that they've grown up with.
Yeah. Well, you said there at the end what I was going to go to. The fact is, unfortunately, as both of us are religious people, that hasn't been driven probably so much by religion as by this generation has been in high school, in university studies, in early jobs with a variety of types of people, and they see that more as the norm. Wouldn't that be true?
Right. I think that's right. You know, and if you're going to put on your theological hat for a little bit, I mean, one real question would be, how is theology going to change going forward? Because in every generation, you know, people bring forward lived experience and kind of go back to kind of our Wesleyan quadrilateral, yeah. You know, thinking about the sources of theology, where scripture and tradition and all these things are brought every generation into conversation with the lived experience of that generation, which is always different from the generation before. Mm-hmm. And so, a theology of diversity, a theology of pluralism, is probably something we're going to see, pushing on, I think, some of the old standby kind of affirmations, particularly anything that sounds more like us and them. Mm-hmm. Those kind of hard categories of us and them, black and white, just aren't things that really drive this generation.
Based on what you found, we could have pretty good feelings about the next generation, the future generation's approach to diversity as being not so scared of it but appreciative of it and just seeing things as normal, right?
Right. I think that's right, yeah.
Yeah. Well, you know, that's it's interesting because – and I want to ask this in relation to the other one too – but one political strategy that has had pretty strong influence in recent years is that of candidates playing on diversity as a way of motivating fear and driving people to protect who they are and their traditions. Would it be safe to say that some politicians may have to rethink their strategy?
Well, you know, I think we see this across a number of issues I think that this is true not just U.S. about politicians. I think it's not only true for politicians. It's also true for churches that I don't quite think, the full range of politicians or churches have fully kind of taken into account where this next generation is. It's a fairly large generation coming through. We haven't seen its full force in voting. They tend to vote a little bit lower. Certainly in midterm elections, we didn't see them turn out. In 2008, they turned out in record numbers. The real question is, in terms of politics, will they turn out and vote and have their voices be heard? As it is, seniors outvote them in terms of actual turnout when it comes to elections. But just a couple of examples. In terms of politics, to go to gay and lesbian issues here, if I'm not jumping ahead too far.
Well, that's fine. We'll go right now.
Yeah, is that for example, half of or nearly half, 49% of Republican millennials favor allowing gay and lesbian people to marry. Now, that's not civil unions. That's same-sex marriage, like full support for same-sex marriage. And that's compared to only 19% of Republican seniors. That's a huge generation gap. Mm-hmm. And so one of the things to say is that this generation gap, in the general population on gay and lesbian issues, for example, there's a 20-point generation gap on every question we asked that had to do with gay and lesbian rights in the country.
I want you to say that again.
Yeah.
20 points.
Right. So when we compared seniors, that is ages 65 and older, and millennials, that is ages 18 to 29, it didn't really matter which question we asked, whether it was employment non-discrimination, whether it was adoption rights, whether it was marriage, whether it was civil unions. Between these two generations, there is at least a 20-point generation gap. And it goes all the way down. So in other words, it's not just in the general population, but even when we look at more conservative cohorts like Republicans, like white evangelicals, there are are these huge, you know, I gave the numbers for Republicans, but if you look at evangelical millennials, 44% of them favor allowing gay and lesbian people to marry, compared to only 12% of evangelical seniors. Huh. So these are really large. The gaps are even bigger, actually, among conservative cohorts.
Okay. Again, I've got to go back and ask about how and why this is happening, because it seems to me, once more, that we're talking about – I mean, you've done other surveys on anti-Muslim bigotry and other forces of hate that document that a personal relationship is the strongest way to change a prejudice. That seems to be what's going on here, not a change in what necessarily what they're hearing from pulpits, not necessarily a change in theology, but the personal experience in society is changing them.
Yeah, I think that's right. That is certainly the lead here is that when we do kind of fancier regression analysis to try to sort out which attributes are more important than others. Certainly, having a relationship with someone who's gay or lesbian, for example, or having a relationship with someone who's Muslim makes a huge difference. They're always among the strongest single predictors of someone's views on this issue. But it's interesting to note also that on underlying values, though, that millennials, it's not just it's not just about relationship, just a policy, but it also affects their underlying values. So they're much more likely to have favorable views toward Muslims, much more likely to see Muslims as an important part of the religious community in the U.S. than seniors are. And on the issues of gay and lesbian rights, they're much less likely, for example, than seniors are to say that same-gender sexual relationships are a sin. Mm-hmm. Than seniors are. Mm-hmm. So they have different moral evaluations. One small wrinkle here that's kind of interesting is that this is less true on abortion. Mm-hmm. So that the abortion seems to be the one issue where millennials actually aren't moving in this direction. In fact, they look not that much different than their parents or grandparents.
That's interesting. Yeah. But the LGBT community and our Muslim neighbors – could take some hope in what we're seeing here in terms of integration and rights.
I think that's right. I mean, if we see right now the American public overall wrestling or struggling with reconciling principles that we talked about earlier to practice, I think the millennial generation, is actually leading the way. And, it's likely then, I think, if we look ahead and the millennial generation is any indicator, these debates will ultimately – there's going to be some fits and starts and some, bumps along the way. But ultimately, I think we're going to see these resolved in the ways that we resolved issues around the inclusion of Jews and Catholics mm-hmm. and other minority groups in the country, which is ultimately around inclusion, even if there are some bumps along the way.
Robbie, I almost always when you're here try to pull you out of your pollster identity and make you a political analyst as well. And sometimes you resist, and it's because of the great confidence I have in your data and also the importance that I assign to your findings. Having said that, there seems to be a disconnect between the audience that many of our politicians appear to be addressing on a regular basis, both with rhetoric and with concrete policy initiatives, and the portrait of the general population that is painted in these surveys. I mean, it seems like the hot buttons of homophobia and religion-based messaging both have limited and shrinking audiences. Now, based on your research, do you see the effectiveness of this kind of messaging shrinking the political movements that are so popular in some people's minds?
Well, I'm not sure if it's going to shrink the political movements. It may shrink the effectiveness of those messages. It's also notable if we sort of step back and take a look at the longer picture here, particularly on gay and lesbian rights. 2011, I think, will be a year we look back on as kind of a sea change moment, not because there's been drastic changes just in this one year. But 2011 is the first year that supporting same-sex marriage has not been a minority position. We've had five different polls, including one of our own at Public Religion Research Institute, showing slim majority support for same-sex marriage. Our last poll has the country evenly split. But if we rewind to just 5 years ago in 2006, only 35% of the public said that they supported same-sex marriage. And that's a lot of ground to cover in 5 years. We also had an interesting question where we asked about what was the most socially acceptable position, and we now have a slim majority saying that supporting same-sex marriage is the most socially acceptable position to hold. Big generational divides on this, with millennials overwhelmingly saying that's the most socially acceptable position, and seniors saying no, opposing same-sex marriage is the most socially acceptable position to hold. But to your more on point on your question, what I think we're seeing is a kind of fracturing or a decoupling of the old values voters dyad of, you know, opposing abortion, opposing same-sex marriage. It's on its last legs. I mean, they're really, and it will play, I think, in for example, Republican primaries, when the electorate is older, whiter, more homogeneous. But when you get to the general election, that strategy that we saw being used fairly successfully in 2004, I think really is going to have a limited effect.
I have to ask you, have you been invited to speak to the Values Voters Summit that's coming up in D.C.?
Not yet, but I would be happy to do so.
I think you need to, because there are some things changing. Yeah. And anybody that's politically astute as well as morally astute will be aware of that.
Yeah. Well, one thing, just to get in before we close here, I do think there are some things changing on that front. And if there is an equivalent to what, you know, the so-called values campaign of 2004, which again was about abortion and same-sex marriage, one thing that we do see in the surveys is attitudes about the place of American Muslims in society and immigrants in society have kind of taken their place as new kind of culture war issues. And that's something kind of new. I mean, even if we rewind to George Bush's presidency, he was in favor of comprehensive immigration reform. He visited a mosque right after 9/11. I mean, these weren't partisan divides in the way that they have become in this election cycle. So that's something new on the scene.
My friends who are listening, let me tell you, the Public Religion Research Institute's findings are not secrets. They're on the web. You can go and look at all of this, and I really do recommend it. The names of the two reports, What It Means to Be American, Attitudes Towards Increasing Diversity in America 10 Years After 9/11, that's one. The second, Generations at Odds, The Millennial Generation and the Future of Gay and Lesbian Rights. They're on their website, publicreligion.org. I urge you to read them. And there's a lot of other insights there from which you can benefit as well. We've gotten a good introduction, and we want to thank Robert and PRRI, of which he is the CEO and founder, for taking the time to provide all of this for us today. Robbie, it's always good for you to come here, and thanks for being with us again on State of Belief Radio.
Always a pleasure, Welton. Thank you.
Yeah.